Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I want to review a comprehensive review of the election system so that I am comfortable with the election processes, including security protocols, chain of custody, you know, everything.
It is time to invest in renewable energy, create good-paying green jobs, and protect our water for generations to come. We simply cannot allow corporate greed and political corruption to stand in our way.
It provides a statistical advantage to the group of candidates listed first. The legislature saw fit to fairly, in my view, provide that advantage to the party that had won the governor's office, and the Dems were butthurt about it, and they were being sore losers.
The ESA program has proven itself to be a big fat target for fraud, and it is keeping my office busy in prosecuting fraud cases, and I think the two fraud investigations and prosecutions that we have underway are likely only the tip of the iceberg.
I think of Wayne Gretzky's quote, "You miss 100% of the shots you don't take." So I'm forming an advisory committee of visionary leaders dedicated to bringing NHL hockey back to the Valley.
And with me to talk about some new priorities for the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, preview the legislative session, which starts on Monday, and more, are Lorna Romero-Ferguson of Elevate Strategies. Good morning, Lorna.
Good morning.
And former state lawmaker Reginald Boulding. Reginald,
good morning
to you. So let's start with new U.S. Senator Ruben Gallego. He and Senator Mark Kelly have both come out in favor of what is called the Laken-Riley Act, sort of the first big immigration-related bill that the U.S. Senate has come up with. So I'm specifically curious for Senator Gallego, how are Democrats responding to his not only supporting it, but co-sponsoring it in the Senate?
Well, you know, I don't think it was a secret that, you know, immigration was going to be topic of discussion, you know, during, you know, this session in Congress. You know, Donald Trump ran on it. You know, you started to see many Democrats move, you know, to be more border hawks during the election. I think right now what you're seeing in Democratic parties, people are saying that it's okay to have a conversation around, you know, deportation, what that looks like. But it's not okay to eliminate due process rights. And that's what this actually act does. And so when Senator Gallego came out and, you know, not only showing his support for it, but co-sponsoring it, I think a lot of people, especially those in the, you know, Latino community, they're taking a step back to say, hey, you know, Senator, we fought for you. We believe in you. We know that there's going to be a conversation regarding deportations, but we can't erode our due process rights and, you know, allow Homeland Security to, you know, hold people indefinitely if they're accused of crimes.
Within Democratic circles, Reginald, is there a sense of like that this might be a sign of things to come? Or is there a sense of maybe, OK, you know, obviously immigration is a big deal. The Senate is controlled by Republicans. You know, people are starting to maybe move to the right just a little bit. This is maybe just a one off.
Well, I don't think Ruben has completely lost his base yet, right? I think people understood.
Yeah, he's been in office for like 10
right,
minutes.
Right. I don't think he's lost the base yet. But I do think that people are expecting him to really stand up and be on the front lines when it comes to some of the more aggressive, you know, border policies, right? You know, if you're talking about, you know, deporting individuals who've been convicted of crimes, you know, I think the generality, the public, they understand that. But once you start talking about, you know, splitting, you know, apart families, you know, eliminating due process rights, going into communities, they are expecting Ruben Gallego as a border state senator to kind of, you know, fight against some of these things.
Well, so, Lorna, this seems like kind of a fine line that Senator Gallego has to walk. I mean, he said earlier that he's going to take a wait and see approach mm-hmm. with some of President-elect Trump's immigration priorities. How difficult a balancing act might this be for Senator Gallego?
Well, it's definitely a difficult balancing act. And, you know, obviously you said he's only been in office for 10 days. I mean, that was the shortest lived honeymoon period amongst, you know, fellow Democrats I've ever witnessed. But, I mean, it makes sense. He was elected to represent the state of Arizona. This was not a landslide victory for Democrats by any means. It was a small margin against not the best Republican candidate, let's be honest. So this wasn't some kind of, you know, vote of the public saying we want a progressive Democrat person representing Arizona. So I think he's taking that to heart. When it comes to immigration policy, he is taking a smart approach, right? There's all of this, you know, hyperbole out there and angst about what Trump is going to do when it comes to immigration. We don't know, right? And there hasn't been any specific policy proposals. So he's taking it step by step about what's being placed in front of him. And this is right now, this current bill is what's been placed in front of him. And I think for people to make these broad statements about just immigration in general versus what this act specifically does, which pertains to people committing crimes, theft and burglary and whatnot, I think there is a lot of even Democrat, you know, voters that support, you know, deporting or detaining individuals who have broken the law. And this is part of that conversation that needs to be had. And I think Rubin is kind of taking Democrats back to a time closer to 20 years ago where you could have these conversations and not be attacked for it, right? Here in Arizona, it was a Democrat governor, you know, Napolitano, who signed the employer sanctions law, mandatory e-verify in the state. And other Democrats at the legislature used to co-sponsor immigration-related bills. And then since then, it's been this shift where it's either you're either with us or entirely against us. And I think Rubin is being very smart about this because, again, he represents the state of Arizona. And voters made it very clear how they feel about immigration here. And, you know, he's taking a wise approach by not going to the far left and just voting for and supporting policies that he thinks are right for the state.
Would you extrapolate that out with his whole like wait and see approach? Mm-hmm. Does that politically, it seems like based on what you just said, that would also sort of be the smart approach, not to come out and say everything Trump is going to do, I'm going to vote against, or everything he's going to do is going to be terrible. But to, as you say, wait and see what the legislation is in front of him and make a decision based on
that. No, definitely. I mean, there could be some really extreme policies that come out of this administration. There could be some, you know, reasonable things that Democrats can get behind. So it doesn't make any sense for him to come out in opposition to what we don't know is coming before us, right? And I know there's people that are trying to pressure him and take that stance. But one, it's irresponsible. And two, it's not actually representing the people of Arizona that he was elected to represent.
Reginald, I mentioned Senator Mark Kelly is also says he's supportive of the Laken Riley Act. When it passed the House, every Democratic member of Arizona's delegation, except for Raul Grijalva, who wasn't there, and new Representative Yasemin Ansari also voted for it. Is this telling in some way of how Democrats in Arizona are thinking about immigration issues?
You know, I really think right now, you know, we know that there's going to be a number of different policies. And you know, again, with this policy being the one that's in front of lawmakers, I do think the devil is in the details, right? So as a policymaker, you have to make sure that you're looking at the line by line, what makes sense. And, you know, for, you know, us to, you know, this bill is being painted as, you know, deporting individuals who've committed crimes. That's one aspect. But it's also, there's also components of here that would eliminate due process, allowing for, you know, the detaining of individuals who are just accused of committing acts. So that's when it starts to get a little bit too far. But I do think, you know, Senator Gallego and the other, you know, delegation here, they're going to have to operate really under what Trump campaigned on. And, you know, a lot of that is, you know, a more extremist policy, separating families, raiding workplaces. And, you know, that's the environment that we're in. And we're going to see what kind of, you know, lawmakers, you know, how they shift in position and support or advocate against some of these policies.
Lorna, let's make a turn with, I guess, a sort of an awkward transition to the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, not talk about immigration, talk about another big issue, though, elections. Mm-hmm. And the new supervisors were sworn in this week. And one of their first things that they said they want to do is to not an audit, but a review. Look.
Yes.
Examination, mm-hmm. whatever other word you want to use, of the county's election system. And it seems as though the new chair, Thomas Galvin, kind of went out of his way to say, you know, this isn't like a cyber ninjas kind of thing, mm-hmm. not an audit per se, just kind of reviewing everything. Again, talking about delicate balances that Senator Gallego has to walk, this seems kind of like a delicate balance, too.
Well, it was more of a clarification by Chairman Galvin, which was an important clarification because the word audit in the state of Arizona and even nationally is politically loaded, right? Everyone has a certain connotation of what that means, and they think of cyber ninjas and everything that happened with the 2020 election. And this is the complete opposite of that. And as Chairman Galvin mentioned, there is no question, there was no fraud, there is no question of how elections have been handled in Maricopa County. This is now a question of what are the best practices? Are there areas in which we can improve? Are there other policy recommendations that we need to make to the legislature to make sure that our systems are operating at the best capacity? And, you know, as government at any level on any topic, there should always be a review of your systems and processes to make sure that you're working as efficiently as possible. And so that's what they're doing. And so it was very important for Chairman Galvin to make sure and clarify to the general public, we're not pulling ballots, we're not hand counting ballots, we're not questioning the validity of the elections. It's just a question of, do we have enough staffing? Do we have enough machines? What do we need to do to make this better? Because all eyes continue to be on Arizona, and we're going to see that happen with a very contested, 2026 gubernatorial election, future U.S. Senate races. So what can we do to make sure that we're doing everything as Maricopa County to make sure that, there can be no question moving forward of how we operate?
Do you think the general public will see and understand that distinction?
I think it's important for, as Chairman Galvin did, for the Board of Supervisors to communicate what that is. And as he mentioned, obviously they have to determine what the scope of work would be for this review, which is going to be, in future, county supervisor board meetings that are going to be public. So, it's going to be incumbent on them for them to continue to communicate to the media and the public what this is and what it's not. Because people can easily turn it into a different circus of what it actually isn't. So I think you're going to continue to see the board talk about this more. But, yeah, it's an important distinction for them to make.
Let me ask you the same question, Reginald, because I would imagine that it would be fairly easy for somebody to look at, sort of a headline or something. Maricopa County says it's going to review election procedures and think, oh, wait, didn't they do this? Like, didn't we go through this already?
This is, I would say a softball to the base, right? You want to make sure your base knows that, you're there. And I think that there's a base in the Republican Party that want to make sure that, elections are still a conversation. When you see, a Supervisor Lesko, a big chunk of her constituents, they're supporting something like this, right? And I think, initially in the primaries, Chairman Galvin and then also Supervisor Brophy McGee, there is conversation with regards to how will you step up and how will you make sure that, election fraud's not happening at the county. So I think this is kind of, giving one to the base. I think ultimately, that headline is probably what the supervisors needed to, say, to folks that, we're looking into it. Will anything come out of it? I don't think so. If there's going to be any election changes, it's going to be at the legislature.
So, guys, on Monday, Governor Katie Hobbs will deliver her State of the State address to officially kick off the legislative session. So, Reginald, I want to start with you because that was something you used to go to as an elected official, as a minority leader in the legislature. There's been so much talk about things like water and housing and the budget, of course. Like, is that kind of what you're expecting to be the biggies coming up?
I think so. I think Governor Hobbs, she's going to talk about, big issues that particularly that can get, buy-in from Republicans and also some Democrats in the legislature. So I don't think you're going to see too many or hear too many policies, in the State of the State that Republicans are going to come out and say, DOA on, right? As opposed to, when she first started, they're tearing up the State of the States. And that's dead on arrival. That's dead on arrival. So I think she'll try to move more to the center. I think you'll hear more on border. We know, Prop 123 is the education component is going to be extremely important. So you'll hear some of that. But it's going to be folks are going to be looking specifically to see how she talks about how she wants to work together with this legislature, which is probably one of the most conservative than we've seen in decades.
Yeah. How do you think Governor Hobbs should try to do that with a legislature that is perhaps more conservative, but certainly more Republican?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, how she sets the tone and the approach of her speech on Monday is really going to determine how easily or not easily she's going to be able to work with the leaders down there. I mean, you're coming off an election cycle that was very intense, where Democrats thought they were going to pick up more seats or even take over one chamber, right? That she was intimately involved in that effort. They were not successful. And there's some, and Republicans are not going to forget that, right? And so they're going into this session with a lot of the momentum in their caucus, and they have bold policies that are very in the similar topics that, Reginald just mentioned that the governor is going to hit on when it comes to water, education, funding, housing, whatnot. It's a difference in approach, right? And it's going to be incumbent on the governor when she speaks to the legislature on Monday about working with both parties, right? And that's going to be difficult for her because, as we've seen with the dynamics with Ruben Gallego right now, she has members of her caucus down there that want her to kind of be that firebrand, right, and fight against Republicans and fight against Trump and this, that, and the other. But as the governor, she needs to lead and govern, right, and take a much more measured approach. And so when it comes to border security, immigration, Prop 123, you know, education funding, you got to work with the Republicans down there if you want to get anything done.
Well, so what lessons do you take from maybe last year when there were efforts to get a Prop 123 initiative to voters? And they did do some housing things, but presumably there will be more. And there was some bipartisan discord on water, things like that. Issues that are still most likely going to come up this year, but have not necessarily led to compromise in the past. What does that tell you about maybe different approaches for this year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's still the same topics as last session, and a number of bills were vetoed or things got sidelined and whatnot. And it's going to be a question of, has she shifted her approach at all, right? Because I think a lot of the Republican leaders down there, and we've seen in the previous days of this week with them talking about their agenda, I don't think they've shifted much when it comes to their approach on water and housing, right? And so it's going to be a question of, how does Hobbs handle those conversations with the leaders down there? And there might be a situation where nothing gets done, right, on those topics, right, unfortunately, because there's not going to be the give and take. But again, Republicans built up their majority, right? They have the momentum behind them. And so it's just really going to be, what does Hobbs determine this session is the line in the sand for her when it comes to governing as a Democrat? But there's a big giant question mark when it comes to these big policy issues. And as you mentioned with Prop 123, they kicked the can down the road last session. They have a time. There has to be a special election
soon.
This year, soon. I know there's questions about the deadline, whether it's this month or next month, but they got to take action on it. And so I would imagine that that's going to be the main focus of her speech on Monday, and how she if she can negotiate successfully with Republicans on getting Prop 123 on the ballot, I think that's good momentum for her going into the session.
Yeah, I'm curious about what you think, Reginald, about the prospects for compromise, because we did see some last year, especially on housing bills, but we also saw a lot of acrimony between the legislative Republicans and the governor's office. Do you have optimism that there can be common ground this year?
Well, we know, like, not only will the state of the state be, you know, sort of the opening for the session, it will also be the first speech, the 2026 reelection campaign for Governor Hobbs,
yeah.
Right? So with that being said, Republicans in the chamber, they understand that as well, right? And for them, you know, having to compromise on policies and vetoes and budgets, they don't like that. So, you know, I do think that, you know, even in areas where there are going to be common ground, there's going to be a political force at play that's saying, you know, do we want this to be seen as a political win for the governor? You know, the governor has to run the entire government in the state. And lawmakers, they don't have that same responsibility. So that provides them some more flexibility to say no. But I would say, you know, House and Senate Democrats, they're going to have a lot more. I think they're going to have power. Folks may see them as marginalized. But when you look at, you know, last session, you know, the ACA or, you know, Prop 400, those things, you know, even Prop 12, you know, once you leave, those things don't get passed without some Democrats. And there's going to be some Republicans in both caucuses that aren't going to vote for whatever, you know, coming from Katie Hobbs. And while there was an increase in the number of Republicans in these chambers, it's not so significant that, you know, Democrats in the legislature won't be needed. There are definitely going to be a need to bring some Democrats to the table.
Lorna, do you think that Governor Hobbs breaks her veto record from a couple years ago this year?
I don't think. Well, interesting, because as Reginald just mentioned, there is a huge political dynamic going into this session. Normally in an off year, you know, you don't really think about the upcoming election, but this is kicking off the 2026 gubernatorial campaign. And so, you know, there might be attempts from Republicans to just throw things up there, you know, that they know she's going to veto. That might be an approach from them. I do think that she might be much more measured when it comes to the bills that come to her desk and signing that. I don't think she will – there will be as much pomp and circumstance around her vetoes. I don't think she's going to promote as much as she did in previous years.
Posting images on
social
media. Yeah,
you know, I don't think that'll necessarily be her approach. I think she's really going to try to focus much more on compromise because she needs people to get some of her agenda accomplished. She needs to get her nominees through. She needs to be able to figure out a way to work with these leaders.
Well, so that raises an interesting question, Reginald, about kicking off the 2026 gubernatorial campaign. And I'm curious, like, in your mind, what is maybe more important for the governor? We talked about, Lorna mentioned, you know, the image of her fighting and, you know, standing up to Republicans. Is that more important, in which case vetoes might be beneficial, or is like the ability to compromise and govern and get stuff done, does that become more important?
Yeah, I think the governor has to, you know, walk into this approach that I am the adult in the room. I'm going to, you know, look at common sense approaches to solutions. And, you know, I do think a overcalculation by Republicans is if they put very extreme policies and they send them to her desk, if the governor can re-message those as, hey, look, if, you know, whoever the nominee for Republican governor, they're going to just do whatever this legislature says. If she can make that direct connection that, hey, you want to keep me here. I'm the common sense person here. I'm not too far right, not too far left. You know, you want someone like me that can stay governing. I think she could be successful. I do think, though, right now, you know, the governor is has to, you know, show what her vision is for the state. And if the legislature chooses, you know, to completely, you know, balk at that, and I think that that's something that she has to, you know, message out to the public.
Lorna, lastly, briefly before we leave, you mentioned this is the kickoff to the 2026 campaign for governor. There are other people in that chamber who might be thinking about running for governor or other statewide offices as well. Safe to say that, like, potentially kicking off their campaigns sounds like a custom-made collision course.
Oh, of course. I mean, that was just one layer of the political dynamics. But yeah, there are people in that chamber or people who will be watching that chamber closely that are looking to, you know, throw their name in the hat for various offices for 2026, right? And so, yeah, anytime that you can, you know, either stand up against, you know, the governor of the state of Arizona or this, that, and the other, and that's an opportunity to fundraise, right? And so, yeah, there's going to be, whether it comes to education funding, water, border security, immigration, I think that's going to be the big one. You're going to see a number of Republicans take a public stance if the governor comes out with something that they're opposed to.
All right, I'll have to leave it there. Lorna Romero-Ferguson, Regina Boulding, thanks you guys both for coming in. Thanks for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.